This is a reading of a passage from Galveston by Paul Corrington.
Later that same day came helicopters, so I'm finally able to respond to Newton's SOS. The others dispatched by news organizations. The reporters were dressed in foul weather gear, even though the storm was far away now, dissipating over Mexico. The reporters wore yellow and green rubber suits that covered them head to toe. The hoods had oversized brims, and these covered their faces and looked like bills. So it seemed as though a strange new species had descended upon what was left of Dampier K, a mutation that was half human, half fowl. The reporters scurried around, some of them photographing the debris, others speaking into little machines, recording their impressions.
The reporters found Polly's body in the storage area. There was a soggy note in her hand, held so tightly in her fingers that it tore when the reporters tried to remove it. They pieced the note back together and read it. "This is Polly Greenwich. She's a good woman. I love her very much. Maywell, Hope."
The reporters chronicled the story in various ways. Some implied that Maywell simply threw the body into the storage area and then hightailed it. Others managed to convey a sense of reverence and ritual, Maywell taking his time despite the danger to himself. None of the reporters got the story right, of course. None wrote that the last of the Merry Boys was gone forever, that while Hope may have been born with a pirate's heart, he died with a finer one. The reporters and rescue workers went up to Lester's Hump, and at the very summit they found a black man and two white women. The three were sleeping, all with small smiles on their lips, as though they were entertaining delightful dreams. The man wore overalls and a white shirt, and despite everything, his clothes had a sense of neatness to them. The girls were pretty, and their clothes were tightened around their bodies by the heavy rains. Their photograph was on the front of many newspapers. Gail Forster and Sorbig Laskin became known as the Hurricane Party Girls, and although they initially distrusted the label, they soon learned that it conferred a certain amount of respect. The reporters didn't think there was much of a story in the case of Jimmy Newton, and his name was only mentioned once or twice in the newspapers. Mind you, there was a considerable buzz on the internet. Weather weenies posting tributes and reminiscences. They felt a keen sense of loss. Not that anybody really liked Jimmy, but he was their Mr. Weather, and without his guidance, the others were left on their own hunches, their best educated guesses. The globe once again became daunting, unknowable, and so they mourned Jimmy Newton and called him the best there ever was. You might think it's sacrilege that Beverly and Caldwell made love once again in the little church, the church that was painted the same shade of blue as the perfect sky. It is true that there was anger in Beverly's heart, that she took a mischievous satisfaction in falling to her knees in front of the wooden cross, folding her hands with mock piety, and then collapsing forward. Caldwell knelt behind her and guided himself inside. Beverly began to hum and hoot and finally to shriek at the top of her voice. She shrieked so that God might hear her over the storm, so that he might understand her anger. But those of you who think this sacrilege must therefore believe that God knew all about Beverly's anger and was forgiving. And you must believe that when the waters crested the cliffside and began to gather up everything that lay in its way, you must believe it picked up the church, almost carefully, the entire pale blue structure, and carried it away to sea. You will temper your belief with what you know of science, and conjecture that this challenges credibility. All right, perhaps it does. But you might believe that when the pale blue church was destroyed, crushed by a huge hands of Hurricane Claire, some of the planks remained attached to the laths and could serve as rafts. And you can imagine that Beverly and Mr. Caldwell rowed these rafts upon the waves until they came to a shore of a small island where the natives, naked and smiling, greeted them with gifts. So the first kind of topic that I wanted to touch on based on the passage that I just read to you was the way that the narrator described the reporters and the rescue teams at the very beginning of the passage that came to Dampier Clay to rescue or clean up the island. He describes them as a strange new species that had descended upon what was left of Dampier Cay, a mutation that was half human and half fowl. The imagery used to describe them as very negative and distasteful, especially because they flew in, you know, to rescue them. The fact that the imagery is really dark kind of leads me to believe that perhaps it's assumed that the teams don't really care about the survivors all that much. No one really bothered to send help during the storm or even before the storm to help prepare for it. And many of the people that came after only came to report on the aftermath, not really to help any of the people that they have found. Corrington especially describes the reporter the reporters in a negative light, almost as if they were like vermin or pests that were going around taking pictures of all the debris and dead bodies. So a good point to note here is that there is a lot of contrast in this novel, and it starts out at this beautiful, sunny, tropical island, and it kind of flashes back and forth between the darkness and gloom and grief that the characters past present, and then at the end, it kind of all comes together with this total darkness and destruction that this Class 5 hurricane comes over this island and completely destroys everything and kills everybody. The next thing I kind of wanted to touch on was the very last section of the passage that I just read to you, where Quarantine talks about Caldwell and Beverly as he speaks directly to the reader. So he speaks directly to us and about our beliefs and assumptions of how the story is kind of going to go. At the very end of the passage, he goes on to say, "And you can imagine that Beverly and Mr. Caldwell rode these rafts upon the waves until they came to the shore of a small island where the natives, naked and smiling, greeted them with gifts." It almost sounds as if Quarantine is calling out the readers for believing that there would be an alternate ending where everyone walks out without a scratch on them and would live like happily ever after. The last section really took me by surprise that way. This book changed my outlook on literature. Quarantine had me thinking that everything was going to be okay, that it wasn't going to end poorly, because of the tone of the novel and the amount of times that I found myself chuckling throughout the whole thing. But really, realistically, why would it be okay? Two people in a tiny church on the edge of a cliff while there was a Class 5 hurricane barreling towards them, it's not going to result in any kind of happy ending, realistically speaking. But he had me believing that it would. So this book really definitely takes reality and shoves it in your face at the very end. I just read to you the very last three pages of the book Galveston, and this book was centered around a hurricane called Hurricane Claire. I expected that the last part of the book was going to be a lot calmer than it was. The last few paragraphs of the book are really a wake-up call to the reader, and they really slap you with reality of the situation. Everybody dies that you like, and it doesn't really end necessarily happy. And these last few pages kind of lay out all the questions that you didn't get answered and all the loose ends that were not tied. And I think this book does a really good job of puzzling the reader. Overall, I definitely do recommend this book. Although it is graphic and it uses intense language a lot of the time, it is ultimately fast-paced and you can certainly get a few laughs out of it. The book is not going to answer all of your questions, and it will leave you thinking, why do they have to die? Why couldn't they have a second chance? In terms of literature, this book does its job phenomenally and it will leave you pondering reality, but it is also an amazing emotional roller coaster to go on, and it's definitely a phenomenal book, and I definitely do recommend that anyone that listens to this reads it.